Hi, I'm Michael Hartman.
I'm Naomi Liu.
And I'm Mike Rizzo. And this is OpsCast,
a podcast for marketing ops pros
and RevOps pros.
Created by the MoPros, the number one community for marketing operations professionals.
Tune in to each episode as we chat with real professionals to help elevate you in your marketing operations career.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of OpsCast, brought to you by MarketingOps.com, powered by the MoPros. I am your host, Michael Hartman, joined today by co-host Mike Rizzo. Mike, what's this year again?
Just to solidify it in the hearts and minds of all of our listeners, it is the year of the MoPro.
The year of the MoPro. We are definitely going to have to come up with something else next year. All right. Well, we're excited to have joining us today Kyle Lacy. So I've had the fortune of meeting Kyle during the pandemic and feel like he's one of a great marketing leader. So most recently, Kyle was the SVP of marketing at Seismic, and he joined Seismic after the company he was with, Lessonly, where he was the CMO, was acquired by Seismic. He has held several marketing and leadership roles at several different companies. In addition, Kyle is an advisor to several organizations, a speaker, author of three books. We're going to get into that. And I think it's safe to say Kyle believes in the power of community to accelerate career. So Kyle, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, so I mentioned the, we'll go into some of this later, but really I know we're recording this in early November 22, and you are currently on sort of a sabbatical, but why don't you maybe share with our listeners, kind of what led you to through your career, your decisions, and making the decision to take a sabbatical, because it sounds like you were very intentional about this.
Yeah, is sabbatical the right word? I've been calling it a sabbatical. Let's just call it. We should call it a break.
Yeah,
just
a break. Yeah.
I think there's been a couple of my coworkers from Seismic have made fun of me because they're like, dude, this isn't a sabbatical. You're taking a break. You're going to find something new. But I think that anyone who's in a high growth software environment, right, that's venture backed or PE owned, where you've got growth goals that are comparatively to other businesses are pretty ridiculous. I believe it is very important for leaders and even individual contributors to understand when it's time to take a break, both from a physical nature as well as just mental health. And for me, it had been 4.5 years at Lessonly. The Seismic acquisition happened. I was very lucky and privileged that I had the opportunity to lead the marketing team at Seismic for a year. But it's, we all know that different stages of companies require different types of people, right? And Seismic, 10x larger than Lessonly, 1,500 employees. I realized pretty quickly that I am built for more of the A, B, C round type company than I am the growth stage that Seismic's at. So for me, it was mostly just, hey, if I'm looking back 2 years in the future, am I going to be in a good place? And I just didn't believe that mentally I would be. So I made the decision to say and I'm very lucky that I could make that decision.
Sure.
Where it's a very privileged, the fact that you have a question about sabbatical is just a privileged thing anyway, that I can actually do this. Right. So I just want to throw that out there because I'm lucky that I can make that decision, but it was more for me to reset and to try to figure out what my next step is going to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about the sort of reset on both physical, mental. It was really interesting. I happened to have to take a red eye flight 2 weeks ago, coming back from the West Coast to Dallas, and I've also reading. I've been listening to the audiobook of Essentialism. I don't know if you're familiar with the book. Mm-hmm. And it literally around that same time was the section about how important sleep was and how it's actually when you don't get enough sleep, it can be like being drunk, right? Or, under the influence. And I literally that day after I got home, I felt so disoriented. Right. And I think that's the extreme, but if what you're talking about, but
it's stress. I was waking up most nights in the middle of the night, couldn't go back to sleep. That type of stuff. When it's compounding, part of that is very dangerous. And so I had to make that decision for myself, and it was a difficult decision for sure.
Yeah, I think it's, I think you're right. It is a privilege. At the same time, I wanted to hit on this a little bit because we actually had somebody on an episode of about 2 months ago who opened up about her own, like having to go into, you know, into, yeah, to a place for help with, basically she had a breakdown, right? And I think it was really important to let people know that it's, you know, you're not alone if you're feeling that kind of level of stress. So yeah, hopefully people will take that for what it is and not, hey, look at how great Kyle is that he gets the opportunity. But like, I think it's good that the people are recognizing that it's important to do that.
Yeah. And you will know when it's time. And usually your gut, I mean, we all make decisions based off of gut instinct, but usually your gut's right. And the difference between me and somebody that powers through it is just, I made the decision to think about my family and myself, and it benefited me in the long run for sure.
That's great. Well, let's get into, you know, what we wanted. I think part of why I really wanted to get you on here is you probably know, Kyle, our primary audience and the listeners is made up of ops folks, so primarily marketing ops, maybe revenue ops, sales ops, and kind of the things that are tangential to that. So I think what I wanted to get was your perspective as a marketing leader on marketing ops and things like that. But maybe start with maybe experiences you've had working with different marketing ops teams and leaders. You know, what were they? Were there similarities to those? And then kind of what was your perspective on the importance of marketing ops? And when did you feel like you needed to bring them into different conversations, things like that?
Yeah, so vastly different experiences between Leslie and Seismic. Those are the most recent. We had marketing. We had a version of marketing ops living in the marketing team through the A and B rounds. And it was somebody that knew Marketo. And then you also had somebody that was kind of like a glorified Salesforce admin, like taught themselves from the ground up. Like they thought marketing ops would be interesting. So they did that. As we got larger and we got more sophisticated on forecasting and pipeline and, you know, we got, our CFO was brilliant at it, but we would be within a couple grand of forecasting the quarter. Like we were that good at it because we had so much.
That's
data.
Amazing.
That's incredible.
because it's half the deals closing quarter. It was a high velocity sale. It didn't like the average contract value didn't really change that dramatically unless we moved up market. Right. But so I don't remember when it happened, but Brian Montminy, who's the CFO, had the ops team. He had a sales ops person. And then we hired a woman named Carmen Seep, who became our VP of RevOps that lived on our finance team, finance and operations team. And that's when I started seeing the value of a true revenue operations org, because she was running the forecasting and pipeline meetings with all the quota bearing managers in the meeting. It was, you know, our data was up to date all the time. She was on, like the team was always on the reps to keep the data clean within Salesforce and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. And then that happened. And then we were acquired like three or four months later. So we,
so the take, wait, sorry, sorry. The takeaway there. No, I want you to keep going. And Hartman clearly has a question, but I feel like the punchline there was once you have solid operations in place, you can get acquired. There you go.
Thanks, Carmen.
Yeah.
And she's brilliant. She's a brilliant rep, absolutely.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Rizzo here, and I'm interrupting your episode to bring you a brief message about, you might have guessed it, Mopsapalooza 2024, our second annual conference held in the vibrant city of Anaheim, California. We're hosting this hybrid event from the 5th of November through the 8th, and we would love for you to join us in person in Anaheim. But if you can't, please join us via live stream, courtesy of our sponsor, Excel Events. We're excited to offer an opportunity for professionals just like you to connect, learn, and grow among the best in the industry. Our event promises to be a highlight of the year, offering invaluable professional development experiences, live workshops, and of course, networking with your peers. Don't miss out on this incredible gathering right next to Disneyland in Southern California. Tickets are going fast. We will cap registration at 700 attendees. Secure your pass by visiting marketingops.com today, and we're looking forward to welcoming you to what is guaranteed to be an unforgettable event. It might just be the best event you've ever attended. But don't take my word for it. You can ask the community at any time. We'll see you there.
So, yeah, it's interesting that you bring up revenue ops, because there's sort of been an ongoing discussion in, you know, online or whatever about RevOps versus marketing ops. Is RevOps really just like another name for sales ops? Forget all that. What I thought was really interesting is that it reported into, you said, the CFO, right?
Yeah, but I mean, at Seismic, we had our operations leader was on the exec team, and RevOps and BI and enablement, sales enablement, all reported under his structure. And I thought that was the best model, honestly. I'm not a huge, and maybe we can argue about this, I'm not a huge fan of operations teams living within the business unit that it supports. Having marketing ops and marketing, sales ops and sales, customer success ops, if that even exists, and customer success, right? I believe it should be a centralized org that is not dependent on, and it should be on the exec team.
Oh, okay. This is really interesting, because we actually had, I think, I can't remember who we had on, we talked about there needs to be, you know, whether you call it revenue ops or whatever, but it really, there should be more VPs of revenue ops, or, you know, that are at that same table. So I think it's interesting to have your perspective on that as well.
Yeah. And Seismic, we had Lauren Andresco is the marketing ops and strategy leader at Seismic. She had a team, and she was dotted line to me, but she reported to Toby Carrington, the EVP of operations, I think is his title, but she was on my leadership team. So it was, and we kind of share, I think we shared the budget, or I was given the budget. It was within my budget, but he was kind of, so that's how the dotted line kind of worked. But I thought that was brilliant, honestly, because she was, Lauren was invested in the success of marketing, but she was also she could play devil's advocate because she reported into a different business unit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the operations living in different business units just doesn't make sense to me, honestly. I haven't experienced that, but that's just my initial take.
You're very fortunate to not have experienced that. I think that's outside the norm. Like, most of the time, in my experience, it's always been centralized to sort
centralized.
Of okay, good. Yeah, like it, or sorry, it's been decentralized in the sense that each one of the roles live in the department. And the last organization that had certainly moved into their later series of investments, that I was working for, was working on creating a centralized biz ops function that sort of brought in a lot of that. But it still was so heavily focused on rev, like sales ops and deal desk and that kind of stuff, that it wasn't truly a rev ops, you know, bringing in CS and marketing ops. Those two particular roles rolled up directly, into those departments. But
Seismic had
moved over.
Yeah. Toby actually built it to where there's marketing ops, sales ops, BI. He had IT and enablement. I think there's a couple other teams that are there. But again, I want to be very clear to the listeners that there still needs to be somebody that lives on the marketing team that understands marketing operations, because I don't think most CMOs actually understand what it means. Mm-hmm. Like, is marketing ops just somebody that's really good at Marketo? No.
I was just having this conversation
I would bet money that you do a survey of a bunch of marketing leaders, that's what's going to be their first thing. It's like, I need somebody that's a Marketo genius, and I'm going to put them in the marketing ops org. But where Lauren Andresco, she had a bunch of marketing Marketo people, but why she is brilliant in her role is that she's steeped in the data.
Yeah.
Right? The back end, and not and not necessarily the fact that, you can build Marketo sequences, right?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think the reality is when there becomes a RevOps function in many companies where it includes those different disciplines or functional areas, it still usually reports up to somebody who's in a more of a revenue role, right? Whether it's a head of marketing.
But you don't want to rely on a different business for your production. That's my thing, is that if I need to build a bunch of landing pages and really break apart any type of lifecycle stuff, I do not want to go to a marketing ops team that lives in biz ops to try to get them to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's more of a center, I'll call it center of excellence.
Yeah. Center of excellence, like around BI, business intelligence.
Right. Like a hub and spoke, right? They're the ones who kind of help set the framework and evolve it and maybe support you on stuff, but on most sort of, I don't know what the right word is, ordinary, like day-to-day kind of operational pieces, like that's really, you see, that needs to live on the market.
It's more of a life cycle marketer, right? Honestly. Right. I mean, and even lifestyle marketing sounds like I was early 2000s, but it's kind of, it's more life cycle oriented and campaign oriented than it is the BI side of it.
Right.
But so there's two options there. There's production side of it, but there's also like, what the hell are you doing with all the numbers and how do you make sense of them in a way that's meaningful?
So it's interesting. You bring up the numbers. Our listeners know that I'm a kind of a huge advocate that we need to increase data literacy, right? And in kind of all across marketing, but in ops for sure, because we are the ones probably have the most access to the data. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that something that you think has that been a normal thing where you've happened to be lucky enough to have people in an ops role that know the data really well and can not only just pull the data, but tell you what it means or how to interpret it, how not to interpret it, stuff like that? Or is
I've been very lucky. Our CFO was brilliant at it. He saved my ass a couple times with where I wasn't reading the right data, honestly. And then at Seismic, our marketing ops team, if Lauren listens to this, she's going to laugh because I'm going to get the number wrong, but I think we had 6 or 7 people and then a bunch of contractors. Like there was, I've always had pretty good support on the data side for marketing ops, which I'm lucky. We early on at Lessonly, we didn't really need it. But then when we started getting to the point where we had to have a pipeline meeting because, you know, we needed to look at the big deals and everybody needed to do their called shop for the week, it was important that that was not owned by a quota bearing leader. It was owned by Carmen, who cared about the overall revenue number, but didn't care about calling out my head of inbound because he didn't hit his number the week before.
Right.
So I think that's what's important about operations team in general. And I like biz ops better than I do rev ops. I think biz ops is more encompassing.
Yeah. Have it in with other operations functions across the entire business. Yeah. No, I think I if I was to pick one, I would probably pick a COO or head of biz ops, something like that is the place for the same reasons. So you mentioned the team at Lessonly and the size, like is, you know, in terms of your experience with different stuff, like have you seen it? And maybe we can go all the way back to like different stages, right? You know, were there certain, well, I'm going to ask if, I guess another question, how involved were you in defining what those initial early hires would be and the scope, the size of the team, or was it something that just that because of where it rolled up, it was other people?
There's other people. I just cared that the reports I needed to do my job, whether that was a Tableau dashboard or Salesforce dashboard, were right and done in a timely manner. So I didn't, it wasn't, for me, Brian built out the operations team in an as needed basis, right? Like as the teams grew, as, you know, I had 70-ish people on the marketing team by the time we were acquired because I had all the BDRs. Like we had a marketing ops person that lived on Carmen's team.
Yeah.
Because the amount of information that I needed and the amount of work that we had to do on some of the back end stuff needed a full-time person. So I think Brian, and I didn't really help scope it. I interviewed the person, but, and Seismic, you know, that's a very different org, right? Sure. It's just a, it's a growth stage. It's a big company.
Were you, was someone coming to you asking, do you need this? Were you just incessantly asking for reports that finally got them?
I was more incessantly asking. Yeah. Like there was, if I remember correctly, Lessonly, it was more, it was a combination of Brian knowing, being a very good people manager and knowing how much he could get out of people in a way that's meaningful, and me just being aggressive and an asshole sometimes.
I think the inner workings of that are important for listeners to understand, whether you're moving into leadership or you're on a role that's servicing some of these functions. Just understanding the nuance of that, right? Like you being incessant about your requests, perpetuating the need for someone to on a completely different org part of the org chart, make a decision that I now have to staff up to fulfill on Kyle's requests.
Yep.
And you not backing down from that, I think is helpful to understand so that whoever's listening to this is got to say like, hey, if these, you know, if these two things are not happening, then you got to overcompensate.
It made both teams better, right? Like we pushed pretty hard on making sure that there was backlogs of requests and what we needed done. And Brian did a great job, and that operations team did a great job managing that appropriately. But it was us collectively pushing each other to be better. And and I think that I know because I've experienced it. If you hire the right people and build the right team, like you'll understand when things are needed, especially at the stage that we were at. It's, you know, under 30 million in ARR, right? And there isn't really a revenue stage either where you need this. I think it's mostly just when does backlog get too big, and are you prioritizing appropriately to hire the right people to manage it? Every company is different.
Yeah, I agree. I think every company is different. You also touched on an important thing for every leader or department lead or organization in general to consider is that, like, look, when you're doing pipeline reports and you're trying to understand the momentum of the business, that can't be done by a quota carrying individual.
No,
right?
Like, it should never. Like that's a great point, Mike. And as a CMO, I shouldn't be spending a couple hours trying to figure out how to do a report.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like why I'm paid to do what I do. Right.
Right.
Like,
exactly. And even as a CEO, right. Or COO, like, yes, you are supposed to understand the numbers and all those things in the COO role and the CMO role, but it's not your responsibility to sit there to try to figure out, is this accurate? How do I build it? Is this
framework but that doesn't mean that you don't. Like,
it doesn't mean you don't. Of course,
I don't want people to listen and not think that I wasn't in Salesforce every
day. Well, I was about to ask you that question. I was like, really, at the end of the day, Kyle, like, I expect you probably know how to do some of these things.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I do. But,
but like,
to the pain and suffering of the marketing ops team. Right.
Right, right.
Well, even if you didn't, right, what you like, this is one of the things I try to teach people who work for me is like, you know, if you're asked for a report, don't just do the report. Like, if you look at the report, like, you should spot, this is where I'm going to get questions about, and be proactive about having a reason why, doing the extra research. I suspect that's what you were doing, right? You saw some anomaly.
And most of the time the reports are wrong. But I think that the important point is, if you are an aligned exec team or you're an aligned leadership team, you will understand when certain hires need to be made in operations.
Yeah.
Because it just, as you hire more people and quotas get larger and revenue, you're growing revenue and you're raising more money, you just need more support. And leadership roles change, right? Like Brian's role as CFO at the acquisition was very different than when he joined at a million or a million and a half of revenue or whatever, right? Sure. And my role changed pretty dramatically. And so you've got to build operations teams to support that, in my opinion.
So, was there, you know, when you say you'll know, sorry, Hartman, I know you wanted to ask a question there.
That's right.
But when you say that you'll know when it's time for those kinds of things, I just wanted to ask, and maybe it's maybe it's you know, you don't know or you don't have any experience in this regard, but did you ever find that, I don't know how early you were at some of these companies, did you ever find that like you, people on the team were like, well, I can do that. You know, I know how to build that report, so I don't really need to go budget for this thing. And then it never gets focused on, and eventually, like, you finally make the decision. Like, is that sort of what happened? Or, like, it's just clear, like, hey, because no one's sole responsibility is to make sure that this stuff is not wrong.
Yeah, that's a great question, man. I think initially, early on at Lessonly, we were, I don't know why we were okay with this in hindsight, but we had somebody that taught himself Salesforce mm-hmm. admin, really wanted to get into operations, and he was the one running reports. And at some point, because Brian is a very efficient CFO, like most CFOs are, so he's not going to just willy-nilly build out an entire operations team because the CMO is like, we need this, or our sales leader saying we need it. He was very responsible about building it out. It wasn't that they could do it. It was that we had somebody that was filling the need where we didn't need to hire the headcount. But once the need grew past their ability is when Brian made the move.
Gotcha.
And that's just good people management. But there wasn't a situation where it was like, we can just do this.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember having those conversations because I never liked building reports. Like it's not something that I love doing. It doesn't mean I didn't do it, but we needed the support as we were spending, you know, as the company grows, you spend time on different things.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. So what's really fascinating to me right now in this conversation is that, because I think we've touched on what I would call campaign operations. And I suspect that most, if we had other marketing leaders on, if we were talking about marketing ops, it would all be about how they supported our go-to-market activities, right? Getting stuff out in the marketplace. And not, I mean, yes, they do data too. It's really interesting to me that you are focusing so much on the need for data insights. And maybe that's partially because you had BDR team, but I don't know if it would you have been the same without that?
No, I think I'm more like that now because Lauren Andresco at Seismic was the first marketing operations leader that I've worked with that was data driven, like straight up data. And that was my first experience with somebody that really understood how to do marketing operations the right way, in my opinion. You know, she was just good at it. So I think most of that is just my experience over the past year. But it's also, I think it's marketers in general, we tend to just focus so much on production and campaigns and not enough on how do you build intelligent reporting and operations to actually make decisions the right way. And I think a lot of times is that because we're brought up to be so reactive. Like marketing just tends to be a reactive org when they should be leading with data in the right ways, not just willy-nilly data, and being proactive with the approaches of campaigns and the creative work they want to do. But I think it's just a combination of a lot of things. But for me, it's been working with Lauren at Seismic for sure.
It's really interesting. So I'm with you that marketing in general is reactive, which means that marketing ops has tended to be even more reactive and try to like go the extra yard to support something because it had to get out in market, right? Committed to something going out live at a certain point. So I know this is not where we were planning on going this conversation, but I'm so fascinated by this. I want to keep going. So a little bit. So the you mentioned like being data driven, but like not willy nilly, I think is what you said. But one of the things I see is some marketing people say they're data driven. What they mean is I get lots and lots of data, but I don't know that they necessarily make a lot of changes or get a lot of insights with that. So it's like, I fear like, yes, data is important, but it's like, how do you know what the right data is? And the other thing I found is you get a piece of data, it begs another question, right? And so like, how do you know when to stop?
Well, so I would say I am not a very, I think marketing teams should be data driven. I think that's why marketing ops is so important. And that's why hiring somebody that really understands how to do it in the right way, like a Lauren Andresco, is so important to the success of a marketing leader. Like Brian was so good at it lessonly that I said he saved my ass a couple times. And that's because I was reading the data differently, like on an inbound funnel. And he found an anomaly that I had missed. And because he found it, we completely rebuilt the website and our inbound took off again. So I think that's why operations in general is important, because a lot of marketers, like you said, tend to just be more production driven. I don't know if I answered your question. I just agree with you.
But. Yeah, it's just really interesting to me that. So I guess, given all this, right? Do you think you're an outlier in having this perspective about ops from a marketing leadership standpoint?
No, it depends. It depends on where you lean. Like I lean brand and messaging and positioning. So I tend to, and I learned this through Seismic because I really had to trust but verify, right? I tend to be more gut instinct and make decisions on an emotional side context, which is why I have to balance myself with a growth and demand leader that is more numbers oriented, right? Mm-hmm. And I just think it's where do you lean as a leader, mm-hmm. and how do you make sure that you're building a team that can support where your inefficiencies are, right? And I think that I'm pretty good at the gut instinct, but sometimes it hasn't worked out. So I've learned through the process, but that's why operations is so freaking important, because you cannot keep track of everything as a marketing leader. There's no way. There's no way, because there's too much data, and you should be leading the team and the creativity and the making sure the team's stoked to get up every day and do marketing for these companies. And right. I could talk about this all day long, but
I want to go back to something you said a little while ago, or one of us said, one of you, I don't know. we were talking about the idea of sort of being reactive, right? And how we don't really take the time to plan out things. But I would argue that, like, what's super interesting is, I think a marketing operations person and people that are oriented in that way want to plan. In fact, they, like, I would argue that many of them want to build for scale.
Yep.
Actually, just saw a post on LinkedIn the other day from a fellow community member who was talking about building things, and it was like, literally the two things were things that scale versus things that fail, right? And a marketing operations person who's really good builds things that scale, not things that fail. And so I'm saying all of this, that's like, so why do we still have this problem? If marketing ops and people who do sort of campaign operations, and we know that we need to lay a foundation in order to scale, want mm-hmm. to be planners, and we've got, you know, many leaders who want to build a narrative, I hope, whether you're a product leader who's built a story arc around why your product exists, a CEO for the vision of the company, or a CMO who wants to distribute that vision and that story in a brand message. There's a lot of planning that wants to happen. Let's just call it top and tail, you know, executives down to operational members, and somewhere in the middle, not in a hierarchy or ladder fashion, but somewhere in the middle, there's this like mishmash of, we're not going fast enough, so someone launch a campaign.
Yeah.
And somehow we lose planning. Like, what happens? Like, what's the deal with this?
I think I've always experienced that random launch of a campaign. Like that didn't change. That's never really changed for me. That's more of the reactive side of me. But I think that that's why BizOps should live on the exec team level and not in an org. Because Lauren she helped me build all the board decks. She was involved in all of our OKR and goal planning every mm-hmm. quarter. She was the one making sure that the budgets and the tech stack and all that stuff was in place in the right way. Like, she was literally my right hand when it came to all of the data side of what we do as marketing team. And I think the reason why that doesn't exist is because not a lot of people have seen it done the right way.
Yeah.
And it's because this isn't like a, like, how long is marketing, like RevOps and marketing ops been around? Like, this is like what Gainsight did with customer success and Marketo did with marketing automation. Like, there, it's a cat, like, the category is just so early. Like, I just don't think there's enough people doing it.
Yeah, it still is really early. I mean, we're talking like formally a role probably for a decade, maybe.
Maybe.
That's about what I would put it at. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can name three people that I know that I think if you were to ask me who are the best marketing operations people, you know, I could probably name three, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two for sure. But yeah. It's not like product marketing, but it's kind of the same type of approach where you really have to spend a lot of time in the role to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it makes it hard to hire for. Like, mm-hmm. product marketing is the same way, but
yeah,
we're not, this is not a product marketing podcast, but it's,
but it like there's a very large community for product marketers out there, PMA, that exists very much in the same manner that this community exists. And it's for that exact reason. It's super hard to hire. It's super hard to learn, super hard to get the respect that you deserve. It's convoluted. Like, what is product marketing? Does it live under product? Does it live in marketing?
Exactly. Yep. Like, it's very similar.
It's very, very, very similar. And marketing ops hasn't been around quite as long. And so we're tackling that challenge in addition to those same similar challenges. But no, I appreciate you answering the question. It's weird. It's weird that we all want to plan, but somehow we always try to put the cart before the horse or something. And then someone goes, why isn't this working?
It's just hard. It's the reactive thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
I would argue that part of that is that we don't know how to plan very well either, though. Like, I think a lot of people, they either don't want to do enough strategic thinking and planning, or they want to do too much detail. And both of them sort of lead to poor outcomes in most cases, unless you're just lucky. But I think, you know, there's a happy medium in there somewhere that works well, where you have enough to go, okay, like, you know, I'm going for, this is where we're trying to get to. We kind of know what we want to go, so we can start taking steps in the direction. And this is kind of how I think about evolving tech stack, even. It's just like, or someone comes to me with, hey, we want to launch this campaign, we want to try this new creative idea. Like, we should go buy X, Y, or Z, or we need to go spend a bunch of money. I was like, well, can we get close to that without doing that? Like, let's use it as an experiment first. And then if it works and we think we want to scale it and use it more, then we can evolve it. Like, that's the way to approach it, as opposed to taking a bunch of money in and a bunch of time and then not actually getting the fruit of it for way longer.
Yeah, it's...
Mike, you said it. You said it. And I'm going to say this to this entire community. I did not fully understand the benefit of ops, marketing ops especially, until I think I've said this already, but I'm gonna say it again. Until I was involved in somebody that really knew how to do it the right way. I started seeing it with Carmen Seep at Lessonly right before the acquisition. And then when moved over, Carmen stayed on, and Lauren at Seismic. They're just so good at the job. Now, every job I go to, marketing ops is going to be one of the main roles that I'm going to be looking at in an org, saying, okay, where does this live? Who's doing it? Because it's so important to the productivity and the focus. Like you said, like, I can't imagine setting goals right now without an ops person.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems crazy to me now that I've experienced it done well. Basically.
And I think when you go to build, I've been in startups my career. When you go to build a product, you have a hunch as a product owner, right? You have a hunch, you do market research, you do some validation, and then you try to build a feature, you build an MVP and so on and so forth. And it's fascinating to me that somehow even in the series A through C's, we're not still taking that same approach, just like Hartman was just saying, like, hey, how do we not go by the tool and we try to,
right, you know,
do something that's MVP to prove out whether or not that's a good investment? it's fascinating that like somehow that doesn't come down the line. And Kyle, you just said, you know, I would be hard pressed to go create goals if I didn't have a marketing ops person. I'd say, well, I think you could come up with some bets, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But
you probably do, but where you're quickly going to run into a problem is how do I measure it? And then I know how to measure it. I know what I need to track, but did I implement it the right way so that I can keep tracking it after we do this test? In other words, did I just create a duplicate field or three other fields that already existed in my CRM and just created chaos?
Or just reuse another existing field in a different way. So
lead source? Oh, I'll just add a few more in here, right? Like,
or you have those a bunch details of people matter. building the campaign reports. And there's no consistency. I think that's what you're saying, but
yes, exactly.
I experienced that at Lessonly for sure.
Those details matter. And for leaders that haven't had to go through that experience, it's like, well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
No, because the second that you say that, it's just, you're just throwing caution to the wind.
Well, and I've said this on plenty of podcasts. I've written about this. You have to, if you're growing a company, hire operations sooner than you think you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the data just starts growing, because you hire more account executives, because you have bigger teams, because you're driving more customers, it is much harder to get anything done if you don't have the foundation set up initially. I think Brian did a great job lastly with that. But you can't get to 10 million in revenue and then hire an ops person. I mean, the data is just going to be a freaking mess, and you're probably not making good decisions either. Anyway. Right.
Yeah.
So talking about, okay. So I like that you're saying hire earlier. I think if I was to poll our audience or our listeners, they would, you know, generally think that the perception of marketing ops is not as a strategic one for most people, despite what you're saying here. So Do you know, for our listeners, like, is there anything maybe from the people you mentioned that you worked with that you could say, these are the things, like, this is either knowledge that they had or a way that they were proactive about something or whatever it might be that was a way that led them to sort of, because it sounds like that's not how you perceived them going in, right? Your perception was not marketing ops as a sort of a strategic function. So how would you suggest those people start to change that perception?
The number one thing is be proactive with your counterpart. So Lauren would bring up things in our one-on-ones that I wasn't thinking about based off of the data she was looking at. She was proactively surfacing challenges or things that we should look at based off of the data that she was managing and monitoring, right? When you're helpful like that and you're proactive like that, you become more strategic because the leadership team relies on you to be that person that's bringing the insights, right? And when you're that person, you automatically become more strategic because you're being helpful, right? In the past, I think we've talked about this quite a bit now, but in the past, marketing ops has been production for me and an order taker and having a backlog. And those are all important things, but it was never a proactive approach to, you might not have seen this in the data you were looking at, Kyle, or do you need help? Here's a slide for the board deck based off of the pipeline numbers. Let's talk about the narrative of the board meeting, right? Lauren was doing all that with me. And I think that that's just what makes it more strategic is when you're involved. And when you care, it feels like you care more about the numbers than the person you're supporting. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, in my opinion.
So, yeah, I would argue that there's a gap in understanding data across even ops where we have access to data.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the storytelling piece of it. Do you think it was, how important do you think that was compared to just kind of knowing the numbers? But
no, it was, that is like 80% of why she's so good is the narrative. Is how do you tell a story with the numbers, not just manage a dashboard and say, hey, something dropped or something went up or a conversion rate dropped, right? She was, I keep saying she was, so she's still doing it. She is really good at it. But I found that extremely helpful as an SVP in a large org, that we would spend a lot of time looking at the numbers, and then we would spend a lot of time building the narrative around the numbers, because it's important that as the company grows, you're all saying the same thing, honestly, especially in marketing.
I think, you know, beginning with the end in mind for any activity, yeah, whether it's campaign planning or phases of your business or both, early stage companies in particular, right, there's different levers that you can pull on to go secure your next round of funding. And if the narrative you've built is around, hey, our traction is really, really strong in the market because we're seeing product usage, or we're seeing free account signups or something like that, then build the architecture and the framework to build a narrative around those things. If it's revenue is increasing or the pipeline close rates are increasing a particular market segment, then build it to support that. But begin with the end in mind and know at the executive level what narrative you want to tell, and then allow your ops team to try to go build that pipeline to tell that story, right? And then it allows the folks like, you know, you've worked with to come up to a meeting and say, hey, based on what I understand from the business objectives or this department's objectives or the campaign objectives, here's what I'm seeing from what you asked us to keep track of.
Yeah, but I also think it's important to note that it's not the ops person should be involved in that exec level conversation. Like, it's here's what narrative we think as an exec team, go make it happen. It's, hey, this is what we think is happening in the narrative. We want you to either verify it or come back to us and let's talk about what's actually happening. I mean, we had a situation at Lessonly where we started seeing a drop in average contract value, and churn rates were going up, and we didn't quite understand what was happening until Brian and the ops team did a cohort analysis on our personas, and we realized that HR, sales, and customer service was our use cases. Customer service and sale cohorts were skyrocketing, both average contract value as well as retention and net dollar retention, and HR was tanking. And we didn't have any idea that was happening. It was just like, we don't understand what's going on. Let's look into it. And because we had people that were good at looking at the data and thinking of a narrative, we made a decision to cut HR out of the funnel, and it exponentially changed the business trajectory, right? So that's, if you don't have the people in place to think through that stuff and look at that stuff, it would just been a bunch of first-time executives at this startup pulling reports and trying to figure out why average contract value was dropping, right? So that's just why it's so important, because I think a lot of companies fail faster than they should because they don't have people thinking about this stuff, and they haven't hired them soon enough. And if you're getting to 10 million ARR and you don't have an operations team together, you better get your ass in gear, in my opinion, because it's going to come bite you if you don't.
Hire so yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have so many more questions I could probably ask, but I want to be respectful of your time. I know this is a lot to ask. So, Kyle, thank you so much. Any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
No, I want to give a big shout out to this community, to the marketing ops community as a whole, honestly, because I think that I think that y'all are behind the scenes a lot for some of these marketing teams, and you don't get the credit you ultimately should get. And I had to see that firsthand in order to fully understand the importance of this. And that's my shout out to this group, because it is needed no matter what. Like, this role and this, or the teams, no matter how it's structured, a productive and growth-oriented marketing team needs marketing ops, no matter where it lives. So shout out to this group, because you keep all of us alive.
I love that. That's a great shout out.
Well, great. So, Kyle, this has been a lot of fun. I always enjoy conversations with you. We always kind of go off in different directions. But if folks want to keep up with you and what's coming up next for you, or your next book or whatever it is you're doing, what's the best way for them to do it?
Well, no more- I wrote... I wrote Twitter Marketing for Dummies. So I'm thinking like this whole Elon thing, maybe I should like bring out the third edition because nobody has any idea what's going on. But no, LinkedIn or Twitter. LinkedIn, you can search for me. Twitter is where I've usually, LinkedIn and Twitter is where I spend my time.
Awesome. Kyle, again, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Mike, thank you. And we miss Naomi, but this was a fun conversation. Thanks to all of our listeners for continuing to support us, continue to give us ratings and reviews. And if you've got suggestions for other great guests like Kyle, or you want to be a guest, just reach out to Mike, Naomi, or me. Until next time. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.